And the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio once again. We appreciate their partnership. Ryan, they actually have a promo code this week for the upcoming tailgate. We'll probably save that till then, but what's so great about these tailgates?
Yeah, I cannot wait. Again, it's as much as you can eat, as much as you can drink, and you look forward to this Bowling Green game this weekend. It's an 11 o'clock game. Tailgate opens at 8. I will be there in line to get a screwdriver. If you want to get a Bloody Mary, you want to get a mimosa, and you want to have them all be bottomless, welcome to the GLC with tailgates. Plus, you'll have Tony's Diner. Yes, that Tony's Diner in Dinkytown serving you food as well. So you know the food's going to be good. You know the beverages are going to be good. And especially as we start to dip back down into fall here and the temperatures begin to get a little bit colder, I think the GLC tailgate's the place to be. But as Luke mentioned, we do have a promo code coming up later on.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to Luke Buer starts his Joe Rossi apology tour.
Never.
As Minnesota shuts out Colorado for their first road, I think the stat is their first road non-conference shutout since 1977. Their first shutout since 2006 as Minnesota goes into Boulder. In front of what, and I was talking with Guardsy this morning, probably 10,000-ish Gopher fans that traveled incredibly well out to Boulder. We got a 30-0 victory to talk about. But, Luke, I think the best part of this is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, and the only reason that you're tuning into this podcast is to hear his takes, is Derek Burns rejoins us after 1 week hiatus. Derek, how are things for you today? And how much did you enjoy Minnesota going into Colorado and just absolutely trampling the Buffaloes?
I'm doing very well, guys. Appreciate you having me back. I did enjoy the game, and it looks like those 10,000 or so folks that made the trip certainly enjoyed themselves. It seemed like both at the game and then maybe the night before and the night of the game, so a little bit of celebrating. So great to see, you know, one of those cool, and I'm such a big college football fan. It's one of those cool things about college football to see people going out and visiting a new destination, taking in a game, and good for those guys.
All right, let's get into right away into the Gopher offense. We almost always start here. The Gophers obviously win the game. Just real quick recap, 30-0 after the first quarter. It was 0-0, and then from there, the Gophers just dominate offense, scoring 13, 7, and 10 in the second, third, and fourth quarters combined. It was utterly just total domination, both offensive and defense. Looking at for the Gophers, when they're on offense, they accumulated 22 first downs. Their third down efficiency was actually quite poor at 3-for-11, but it really didn't matter at the end of the day. They only attempted 17 passes because they rushed for 277 yards, 5.2 yards per carry on 53 carries. A pretty clean game also in terms of penalties, just complete utter domination, especially on the offense and especially on the defensive side, but we're talking about offense. And I think the most important thing, Ryan, 40 minutes and 13 seconds of possession. I have to imagine that PJ Fleck probably shot Greg Schiano. Boy, that was going to be really bad take. He might have shot Greg Schiano a text, but he would have shot Jim Tressel a text letting him know, hey, we won it the right way today.
Minnesota won that game in a very PJ Fleck-esque game in terms of the game plan between him and Mike Sanford, where they passed the ball enough to keep the run conducive. Now, I will say Colorado, we'll get to their offense, and I don't know that they're particularly good, but I think this is a good run defense that Minnesota was able to go in and really establish the run against. Because you look at just 1 week prior when they played Texas A&M, which is allegedly a top five team in the country, they limited them to 97 rushing yards. And then Minnesota is able to come in here and run for We didn't take out the sacks. 279 yards on the ground between their backs. And I think it starts up front. And that's where, after I think a mental lapse where Minnesota just thought, or at least the Minnesota Moving Company up front thought that they could just sleepwalk through Miami of Ohio, they turned it up a notch against this front seven. Now, the backs certainly did their part, and we'll get to maybe the new pair and the spare there with the two freshmen. But I thought that the physicality between the offensive line, I think the best run-blocking tight end in the Big Ten and Cokeef, who just absolutely – that's probably my favorite part of the rewatches now, boys, is watching Cokeef absolutely baptize different defenders on these long runs each and every week. He is just so physical, knows how to play with such great leverage, and he is just such an integral part of the Minnesota Moving Company. But Derek, I think especially when you compare their performance to a week ago, it felt like the physicality ramped up against Colorado, and that was a large part of the reason why Minnesota had so much success.
Well, definitely. And I it was interesting to me, you mentioned, Ryan, Colorado having played a really good game the previous week against what is supposed to be a very high-ranked Texas A&M team. Colorado schematically thought they could match up with Minnesota in the run game. They came out early in the game for most of the first half trying to match up in the box, probably because of the success they had had previously against other opponents, and they couldn't match up physically. Minnesota was, with their offensive line in front seven, was much more physical, and Colorado ended up shifting in the second half to going plus one, especially once Minnesota got out to a 13-0 lead. They had to bring another defender in the box and make some adjustments, to which Minnesota countered a little bit. So it definitely was a very marked, I might even say 180-degree difference from the previous week, where against Miami of Ohio, you just didn't see the intensity. I you know, whether it's the opponent that they were playing or the fact that they knew they were going to be blocking into loaded boxes, whatever the reason, it was a complete change on Saturday against Colorado. Very good job up front. And I'll just add on, the Cokeef, I know we'll probably talk more about it, but one thing I want to say about him that I really appreciate is, being a veteran guy, he's one of the guys that is not up and down week to week. I mean, we've got three games this year. He's had several, games previously. The guy gives it everything on every game. He's not one of those guys you're looking to and you're breaking down film and saying, what type of a game did he have? What type of an effort did he bring? He knows he knows what he's supposed to be doing, gives full effort on every play, and just gets better and better. And I think that was his best blocking game of his career on Saturday.
Luke, did you see the photo that Co tweeted out afterwards?
I did see the photo, and I actually just wanted to say, like, if we just want to start like a Cokeef appreciation podcast, I'm all for it. So, like, he is playing, to your point, Derek, some of the best football I've seen him play. And if you love football, you will recognize and appreciate of how good a job he is doing. And Ryan or Derek, I appreciate you calling out that he's been so consistent, because he has. I was ecstatic that they actually gave him a target in this game. I'd like to see them get him involved anymore. And then just lastly, to round out, if he can give Brevin Spanford any blocking advice, like, take him aside, keep helping him, because, man, Cokeef is just on another level right now.
I mean, it's nice when you're able to watch these big, long runs from, whether it's Trey Potts, now Bucky Irving, even Kai Thomas. But before we kind of get to the backs, I'm curious what you guys thought of the passing game, because I thought Tanner was fine. I think Tanner, for realistic collegiate quarterback expectations this year, I think Tanner has played well. Has he missed some throws? Yes. Has he made a majority of the throws? Yes. It's a little surprising to me how little through three games they've essentially asked of him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to see, and I had this in the snap counts and the PFF grades, that with Chris Ottman-Bell back, it kind of shifted Dalen Wright into a secondary role, where in these two wide receiver sets, you saw a majority of Daniel Jackson and Chris Ottman-Bell, which I think makes sense to a degree, but I do think once Big Ten play comes and you get the Purdue's and the Nebraska's and the Maryland's of the world, I mean, you'll still have a viable three wide receiver set with Brevin Spanford, and they even throw in a Cokeef target there. But I think the passing game, and I think Tanner Morgan in this game played fine. It was nice to see Chris Ottman-Bell back making contested catches. Derek, I loved seeing Minnesota actually throw out of their jumbo set where they hit Chris Ottman Bell for a first down on a tunnel type of screen there. But I think the passing game has a chance to be really good. It's just that Minnesota has not opened up the playbook, or if they have, they haven't gotten past the first page. But what did you think of the passing game?
Well, a couple things. So just quickly on Tanner, I think you nailed it. He pre and post snap reads, I think was solid all day. Early in the game, I think hitting his spots, he was a little bit shaky. Looked like he was squeezing the ball a little bit, throwing it, maybe overthrowing it a little bit. He really, I think, got that worked out as the game progressed. But overall, I think, your words about he hasn't been asked to do too much so far. And if anything, he's been asked to protect the football, things like that, which he's done well. So starting with good decisions. But as the game went on, I think what you're going to see in this game was a little bit of a key into some of the things you might see out of the Gophers passing game. First is, how do they respond when teams go plus one in the box, or maybe if they're playing, an elite defense down the road where they cannot run the ball for 5-6 yards every single time when they want to, what happens then? Well, you saw they did develop some throws out of their jumbo package, which is the look is there. So you split out two wide receivers. That's going to force the defense. You're either going to have to bring a safety over to help them, which is going to take him away from run support. Or you're going to have to bring him in and run support, and you're going to have two guys potentially in man-to-man situations. So those 50-50 balls and other things we saw sort of emerging on Saturday, I think you're going to see more of those as games go on. Secondly, you saw three different passing plays you saw them bring out against Colorado to throw out of those loaded boxes. You saw just a standard bubble screen. You saw another sideline screen that unfortunately got called for ineligible receivers downfield. And then you saw the opposite of the bubble screen where you bring an outside receiver in on a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a middle screen, but where you're throwing to the sideline in a single coverage. So look for those things to come up more as the year goes on and the Gophers are in those situations where teams are just going to try and force them to not run the ball.
So real quick to maybe wrap up on Tanner, 11 of 17 for 164 yards. I think, Derek, you made a good point in that, early it looked like he missed a couple throws, and that's a part of football. But he was able to settle in and play better, and he made some big-time throws, especially like the crossing route against Dalen Wright or to Dalen Wright. I also appreciated that he was willing to take some shots. He did get, got a pass interference call. Those aren't really ever collected in the stat sheets. I thought that had to kind of force them to be a little bit more honest, because at the end of the day, the goal was just to run the football, and they did that incredibly well. And I do think we need to focus our conversation there, especially because we've seen kind of maybe a passing of the guards, Ryan, here in the backfield. Obviously, Trey Potts is going to be the feature back. He got 26 carries for 121 yards, but then we saw both Marquise Irving and Kai Thomas carry the rock as well. So I just want to get your thoughts. One, for people that maybe don't follow recruiting super closely, give us kind of a quick background on Marquise Irving and Kai Thomas, when they came in, and because there are high expectations from a lot of real diehard fans.
Well, they were both four-star running backs, and you can start to see that these young running backs are figuring it out a little bit. And that's where I think maybe the most interesting storyline going into a homecoming game next week, where I think Minnesota's a 4-touchdown favorite over Bowling Green, is how do the running back snaps continue to go? Because I can tell you, Bryce Williams played 3 offensive snaps, and Cam Wiley, who traveled, didn't get on the field. Whereas Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving, I think that was probably my favorite part of the rewatch today, was watching the final 20 minutes of the game, where we got to see a lot of Bucky Irving and a lot of Kai Thomas. And you can see why expectations are what they are. I think Bucky Irving in his first collegiate game action was tremendous. I mean, the kid was making men miss left and right. And again, I can't understate it enough, and Derek could probably speak to it, is in your first collegiate game, I mean, your heart's got to be pumping the entire time. You're probably going to be pressing to an extent because you're trying to make a play. But he looked relaxed out there. I mean, he regularly made men miss. I think Pro Football Focus had him with 8 or 9 missed tackles on 15 touches, which is tremendous. But you saw him comfortable in between the tackles. You saw him patient in between the tackles. You saw him being able to take it outside as well. And that's where, again, Bucky Irving was a 4-star in the 2021 class. He's still just a true freshman. I mean, 3 months ago, he wasn't even here. Now he ends up with 15 carries for 89 yards. And, I mean, does he have some things to work on in pass pro? Absolutely. But when you look for a back to try and complement Potts, whereas Potts likes to kind of move outside the tackles, I think Bucky is very comfortable, at least in our first data set of him, comfortable running between the tackles. And then you saw Kai Thomas get in there. And now he had some help with the blocks. But again, you see him with the patience and the vision. And that's so tough to teach. And again, I think these two are the pair in the spare now. You got number two with Bucky Irving. And then if you need to go to three, you got Kai Thomas there. And Derek, I think their running styles complement Potts well. But again, I've seen these guys before. I saw them in high school. And this was your first real live game action look at Bucky Irving and Kai Thomas. What were your impressions of the freshman backs?
Well, I think that maybe this is oversimplifying a little bit, but the number one thing compliment I can give Bucky Irving is the first guy never took him down. That's, you know, if you're going to earn a scholarship at a Division I Power 5 university as a running back, that's your job. Don't let the first guy make the tackle. If you can make one guy miss or shed one tackle, you've done your job. You're earning your scholarship. And as you mentioned, Ryan, on a couple of those runs, he made 2-3 guys, maybe even 4 guys miss or at least shed tackles. So was able to get a lot of hard yards. And in fact, in some ways kind of reminded you of Mo Ibrahim, and that, you know, maybe not the most clean blocking on some of those plays. Maybe Colorado was stacking the box, but he's still able to muscle out 4 or 5 yards on a few of those, which I'm sure PJ Fleck loves. And the blocking was, you know, Kai Thomas took advantage of some good blocking, and but at the same time found the hole, you know, it burst through the hole. And then, you know, the other thing which I think is worth mentioning is in this game running the ball, Minnesota tried to be unpredictable and a little bit more dynamic in terms of formations and blocking calls. So what they tried to do is keep Colorado from anticipating the run play. So yes, they ran a lot of inside zone and then mixed in power, but they did it out of a lot of different packages and formations and blocking calls. So to go back to Coquille for a second, they used him in many different situations. Sometimes he's pulling back and blocking the backside DN. Sometimes he's pulling through the front as a lead blocker. And so as a defense, specifically for those linebackers and maybe a strong safety, that really keeps you on your heels because you're not able to determine where the point of, you know, where the play side is going to be, what type of, you know, run game it's going to be. So getting back to the running backs, it's a credit to those guys to go in there and have to take the ball and find the hole and be able to, you know, do their thing, knowing that it's not the same play every time. It might be the same type of call, but it's out of a different formation with a different blocking scheme. But as you said, Ryan, they fit right in. The lights weren't too bright in the first game for either of those guys.
All right, so real quick to just kind of circle back and close this out. Ryan, we do need to give you some credit on your takes where credit are due, okay? You said,
how did that taste coming out of your mouth?
It hurts a little bit, but I'm going to get you back later. So, one, we talked about going into the season, you know, obviously didn't want an injury to Mo Ibrahim. The fact that he is obviously the best back on this roster, also the most experienced back, but you know, the worst happened and he did end up with an injury, and you kind of set the expectation with like, hey, you know, season's not over if Mo gets hurt. There's a stable of backs here, and we've seen this. So now looking kind of at the carries and the distribution of carries, obviously there seems to be an emphasis on Trey Potts will probably get the bulk of them. But one thing that stood out to me is in their first action, Bucky Irving and Kai Thomas already eclipse both Cam Wiley and Bryce Williams in carries. So very much true that this probably is the pair and the spare. But Ryan, I just got to know what's going to be the next, what's going to be the situation going forward in your opinion at running back?
Yeah, that's the question. And that's the thing that's on top of my mind. And I mean, you can ask Fleck and Sanford about it this week, and I'm sure I will potentially, but it's like, I feel for Bryce Williams because that game went about as poorly as it could have for him in that spot, and it sucks for him. He gets one carry and he fumbles it immediately and is benched. He has the special teams gaffe where he has the squib kick right at him, but he fields it with his knee down. So the defense or the offense.
Was that actually him?
That was him.
I thought it was the number 40. Williams.
It was. And that's Bryce Williams on kick return, which is a whole another. It's a whole thing. Cause Justice Harris.
Okay.
It's special teams snafus, which we'll get to, but
okay.
I mean, two horrible plays. And it's just, I think this is a Wally Pipp type of situation if you're Bryce Williams. It is what it is, bud. I mean, Kai and Bucky, I mean, when the lights came on, they performed. You didn't. I think the thing to watch here is what in the hell do you do with Cam Wiley now? Because that kid traveled, didn't even see the field, whereas Bucky and Kai did the most with their opportunities. And again, it's nothing personal. It just kind of is what it is with those two. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this was the swan song for both of them, because I don't know how you put Bucky Irving back in a bottle. I don't know how you kind of put Kai Thomas in a bottle. I mean, maybe they can find something with Bryce Williams on third down pass protection, but
yeah,
I think we've seen a changing in the guard here. And the crazy thing to kind of look at it is, I believe Trey Potts, Bucky Irving, and Kai Thomas all have 4 years of eligibility left because of the weird.
Yep.
Everybody gets a free year. So we're looking at three running backs that have 4 years of eligibility. I mean, for as good as they've been playing here in the first couple of game opportunities for them, it has to be incredibly encouraging that they still have 4 years of eligibility left, at least for those three guys. But I think the last thing I want to state here, Luke, before we kind of round off, and I want to get Derek's take on it is, Derek, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you mentioned Minnesota running different plays out of different situations. And I think the thing I've noticed here through three games with Mike Sanford is we've seen as much gap scheme in terms of guys pulling and different variations of that than I think we ever saw in the Shiraka era as the offensive coordinator. Like, we've seen a guard and Co-Keith pulling in it feels like at least like 40% of the time compared to where Shiraka, we saw just essentially inside outside zone, not a ton of pulling. Am I off base on that? And I think Minnesota's actually had quite a bit of success running with these pullers. But I think the point I'm also trying to make here is I like that Sanford is throwing variations out of different sets. Like, you can have 22 personnel or 31 personnel. I mean, whatever you want to call it. But if you're just going to run inside, middle, or outside zone, you can get that combated. But Minnesota's showing variations of that with this gap scheme stuff. Am I off base on that? Or have you seen as much with the pullers under Sanford here this year as we kind of saw the last 4 or 5 years with Fleck?
Well, I think part of what you're seeing is you're right, and that they're running power, and they typically like to introduce that later in the game. So they'll start off running zone, and then they'll go to that as a change of pace. And for good reason. But the other thing I think you're seeing, Ryan, is the way that they're using Co-Keith and their tight ends, they will also pull them or pull them back side on zone. So that maybe isn't a power play, but if it's just the tight end, in some cases they're using that blocker in zone, and it might appear to be gap or power where it's really not. And the reason that they're doing that is they're doing less of the zone read. So if you're not going to use the quarterback as a zone read or the threat of him keeping the ball and running it, then you have to account for another blocker. And you do that by taking your tight end or your H-back and pulling him back to block a backside or a front side end of line of scrimmage defender. So I think it's a mixture of both, but you know, it's good coaching, and that what I see the staff doing is they look at what they have, they look at their deck of cards and say, we've got Co-Keith, a guy who we feel is as good of a blocker at tight end as anybody in the Big Ten. How do we utilize him more rather than just put him on the end of the line of scrimmage when it's zone, have him combo block with the tight end or have him force block out to an outside linebacker? Okay, great. But really, how do we get him involved? And that's what you've seen them get creative with, is pulling him play side, bringing him back on a wham block backside, all those different types of things. But But like you said, I totally agree with you insofar as they've done a really good job trying to be unpredictable and mixing up schemes and personnel, because that's what they're going to have to do if they're really committed to wanting to run the ball 60%, you know, or whatever, a very high percent of the snaps. When you get into the meat of Big Ten play, you can't just line up in the same personnel in the same formations and run inside zone. You give those linebackers and those front seven enough looks, and by the second half, they're going to be adjusted to it and be able to shut it down. So,
all right. So before we conclude with offense, I think we should talk about just kind of some coaching stuff, and mostly how we handle timeouts. I know this is a topic we've covered previously. Obviously, PJ wants to get his players in a position to be successful, and if he thinks that's not the case, he will burn the timeout. He was able to do that. Frankly, in end of clock situations, whether it be the half or the whether it be the first half or the end of game, we're often absent timeouts that, you know, a lot of people normally will store up to use to try and score. So let's take to the situation yesterday. The Gophers make a stand on fourth down. Did they force a turnover? I'm forgetting at the moment. Downs. So they turned them over on downs, and then Minnesota gets the ball back with, let's see how much time that was, 105 left. They run with Trayson Potts for 4 yards to the Colorado 45. Eventually end up into that already mentioned, Derek, the lineman downfield. And then, so you've got about, 15 or 20 seconds left with that. And then we have this kind of debacle. So maybe Ryan, I know you've looked at this pretty closely on replay, but you can explain the debacle where basically you don't get the kickoff. But then I want to circle back and make sure we talk about the use of timeouts again.
So here's how I think the situation played out is Minnesota tries to go to that little screen to Daniel Jackson. They get Schluter and Olsen in space. They get ineligible man downfield with 12 seconds left. Now, I'm not sure why on an accepted penalty, the clock doesn't stop. But the way I saw the rule explained via some people is the clock is stopped until the ref deems it, has his hand in the air and then starts the clock again. Now,
I explain my understanding of that real quick? Because I tried to read this and my understanding is that In a situation, the penalty's on the offense, it's the defense's then choice to either stop the clock or run the clock. So Colorado should get the choice for it to run, and obviously in that situation, they would want the clock to run, so therefore they ran the clock. That is my understanding of the rule and how I would assume that it went down on the field, but then you can get to the communication piece.
So this is where I believe why Fleck was irate, is Fleck talked to the side judge and he asked, and he said this in his halftime thing with Justin Guard, is the side judge told him the clock will stop. And so Fleck is like, okay, I don't have to burn that third time out. Minnesota obviously has no idea the clock is running. And then everything runs out and Fleck is irate. Now, should the side judge was wrong. And Fleck is pissed at the side judge, but I think the official explained it to him that the side judge was wrong in telling you that because it's a lie. But what happened on the field was actually the result of what was supposed to happen. So, I mean, I'm sure I'm doing a horrible job of explaining that, but essentially the side judge told him the clock would stop. So no one's looking at the clock on the Gopher sideline, which we can get to on how that happens, but it runs anyway. Minnesota doesn't get any points before half and it's just a complete debacle. And that's why Fleck was absolutely irate. And that's where I'm sure the referee came over and said, yeah, our bad, side judge was wrong. And so, of course, Minnesota should have burned their third time out there. And I think that's the point here is it sucks that the side judge explained it to Fleck wrong. But of the 50-something staff members on the sidelines there, how is no one looking at the clock, seeing it's running, and telling Fleck in the headset, hey, it's running, it's running? Worst case here, Fleck burns his final timeout to scream at the officials, who then would say either my bad or, this is what's going to happen. But that's just inexcusable that no one is looking at the clock. And now I understand Fleck was told the clock's not going to start here, but it did. And how did no one notice it and scream into that headset for 12 seconds saying, hey, the clock's running, the clock's running, the clock's running? I have no idea.
Yeah. So I guess maybe we should just transition to like use of timeouts philosophy. I know, Derek, you've kind of articulated this previously about how Fleck tends to want to take them and make sure that, you know, you get yourself set up, you know, aligned well, or if you're in a bad situation, he's willing to burn a timeout. But at a certain point, does he need to change his best?
Well, we have talked about that before, and that's a preference of his to get out of a bad situation. He will burn a timeout to get out of a bad situation. And if you're going to play devil's advocate, what you might say is, look, early in one of the halves, if you're not in a critical, you know, in the red zone, something like this, or backed up against your own goal line, you might consider, well, just let it go, you know, and save yourself the timeout, because you might need it, especially in the second half. You know, you get into a situation where you might need to use all three timeouts, incredibly valuable to be able to stop the clock. The only thing, if I'm going to argue in favor of this philosophy, is it's a solid because of the clock stopping on every single first down. So there are other ways you can manipulate clock stoppage when you want to, but I mean, ultimately, I think this is who he is, and this is the style that he uses, and he doesn't want to leave his players out there in a bad position, whether it's offensively or defensively. So he will burn timeouts early just to get him out of the right, get him out of the wrong look.
Well, that's where Fleck has talked about at length. Like, he has acknowledged with the media and essentially to tell the fans, you're not going to like the way I use timeouts in the first half, where it's like, if I see something that's wrong, yeah, first half, I'm burning a timeout. But that's where in the second half, it needs to be more about clock control situations and being, you know, very careful about when you're using a timeout and when, because there are going to be much closer games than what we saw on Saturday, especially come October and then particularly November. But it's just kind of been the way it goes with Fleck timeouts. It's funny, though, Luke, that, you know, he burns the first two timeouts within like the first 8 minutes of the game. Yet no one, I just cannot get over, no one on the sideline or in the boxes notices that the freaking clock is running and relays that to Fleck for him to finally burn a timeout there. It's just inexcusable.
Well, and it's clear, Ryan, that everybody thought the clock was stopped or was going to stop because they ran the ball. So obviously their plan was, okay, the clock stopped, we're going to run it and then take our time out. So that was just one more piece of evidence pointing to the fact that they all thought the clock either, you know, was not going to run.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, regardless, it didn't matter in the outcome of the game. Now it could in the future. So that's an area that obviously the coaching staff needs to improve. I'm with you, Ryan. Somebody needs to be eyes on the clock at all moments, and we can't make assumptions because we know what happens to people that make assumptions. Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, we have a promo code, and I think you kind of have to be a diehard Gopher Gridiron Radio fan to really get this promo code.
I think so. So for you non-members that want to try out a Goal Line Club tailgate, to get $10 off at this upcoming tailgate for Bowling Green, we want you to use the promo code when you check out the goalineclub.org website of Lebowski10. Yes, you're thinking of the movie The Big Lebowski. And I know the GLC people are still distraught that I think that The Big Lebowski is just an okay movie. So in their attempt to troll me and to save you $10 per non-member at the tailgates, use the promo code Lebowski, Lebowski, 10, as in the numbers 1 and 0, and you will save $10 off per non-member. They really want you to get in here. We'd love to see you again. I'll be there starting at 8 a.m., so for those of you that want to come and make sure you get the most out of your tailgating experience with the bottomless screwdrivers, mimosas, Bloody Marys, or whatever kind of beverage you want, along with Tony's Diner, we'd love for you to use the promo code Lebowski10, Luke.
Again, remember, space is limited, goalineclub.org. All right, let's chat a little bit of defense here. 0 points, always good. Just some real quick numbers. 6 total first downs for Colorado, 63 total yards, 2 turnovers. Man, just minus 0.9 yards per carry if you include sacks. The Gophers finally got sacks. I mean, all in all, this was a great outing from the Gopher defense. We probably have to consider whether or not this was a great Colorado offense. We didn't think it was coming in, and I think that was evident here. But we have to give credit where credit is due. They didn't play down to the opponent, and they held them in check. Great game plan, as Ryan, you've already alluded to.
Are you ready to apologize to Ross yet, or do we need to?
I think that the sample size is a little bit too small for me to start apologizing. So I need, you know, yeah, not quite yet.
Well, here's what I'll say: the defensive line finally decided to show up, because that was the defensive line that we had been seeing in practice throughout 2021. They didn't show up the first 2 weeks. And it's amazing what happens when the defensive line, particularly the defensive tackles, I think, really start to get interior pressure. Because you look at, yes, Boye Mafe had 2 sacks, Thomas Rush had 2 sacks, but you look at how they got there. And that's where I think it's huge that, I mean, one particular, I think Thomas Rush's 2nd sack, MJ Anderson does all the work. Minnesota runs a twist inside with their tackles and their ends. MJ does a great job of keeping his inside arm on the guard long enough. And then you see the quick twitch of Thomas Rush being able to jet inside him to be able to get the sack. But even in the run game, you saw guys setting the edge. You saw guys playing with physicality. And this wasn't the greatest offensive line, but it's still a Pac-12 offensive line. Now, I understand they got banged up, especially as the game went on. But I have nothing but good things to say about this defensive line. I think the only thing I would say is, I mean, I asked Rossi about it on Wednesday when we got him, and he had challenged the defensive line that they needed to bring it. They brought it against Colorado. Now, Minnesota's a 4-touchdown favorite for their homecoming game. Let's not relax. How about you bring it to a bad Bowling Green team so that you continue to have momentum going into your first game against your first game of October going against Purdue? But, Derek, I think that's what stood out to me most was when the defensive line is playing well, and they're playing physical, and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Luke is really tired of me saying this, but a rising tide lifts all ships, and it starts on a defense with their defensive line. What did you think of those guys up front?
Well, I think I agree with Luke in that all three levels of the defense play off each other. I would even turn that down a bit and say that in the Miami game, I think part of it, not, I don't want to overstate this, but part of what you saw was Minnesota running some very vanilla zone pass coverages in the secondary. And if you watch the Miami game, the quarterback was out with the football on his first look on almost every passing snap. So I think the rush was a little bit better in the Miami game than maybe people thought. He just didn't get home on any of them, but they were close, but the ball was out quickly. Where what you saw in the Colorado game, I think the coverage was a little bit better. They mixed it up a little bit more. I wouldn't say, you know, they were mixing and disguising coverages at sort of full capacity, but they mixed it up a little bit, and that made the quarterback hold on to the ball a little bit longer. And so you saw some of those rushes get home. So I think it's a combination of those things. I think they did challenge the defensive line. You saw them step up the intensity, play with more instincts and things like that. But I think they also got some nice help from the secondary because of a little bit tighter coverage on the back end, and then even mixing up coverages a little bit from time to time.
All right, so, you know, defensively, we've talked about this ad nauseum. The season is probably predicated on the defense's ability to be consistent and give the offense just enough of a window to score enough points, right? Obviously, the defensive line makes the improvement. I guess the big thing that stuck out to me in this game is, one, they bottled them up, but two, they didn't have those lapses that we've seen where they give up big plays. I don't actually know. Ryan, do you know what the longest recorded play was? I think it's maybe 12 yards.
12?
Yeah.
It was 12 yards.
Yeah.
And they didn't allow a single thing. And that's where we'd seen mobile quarterbacks like Taulia Tagovailoa and Adrian Martinez last season gash them. And that's where I think, and to credit to Chad Wilt and Joe Rossi here, is to me it looked like they had a great game plan to try and keep that quarterback in the pocket, where their ends really didn't get too high, where you know, they got to the quarterback depth level and then they didn't get any further. And Minnesota also on these passing down situations, they played a lot of man spy, whether that was Thomas Rush, Donald Willis, Braylon Oliver. They always had a guy waiting there, kind of just spying on the quarterback there. And again, that's what you should do, because this passing game between the quarterback and his pass catcher, and the options there weren't great. But Minnesota made sure they weren't great. And I think it was just a great game plan all around, from the defensive line coach to the coordinator there. Because I think that the defensive line playing with that discipline to where, again, whether it was Rush, Mafe, Otemiwu, MJ Anderson, you didn't see a lot of times where the defensive ends really tried to turn the corner and get too far deep, which would allow that, the quarterback to kind of escape the pocket. They kind of built like a half circle cage around him with the man spy, which I thought was a great decision, Luke.
Yeah, definitely was a good decision. It's hopefully something that they can do going forward, because as you mentioned, they are going to meet some very mobile quarterbacks, and they're going to have to find a way, to keep these offenses in check. Okay, any other specific defensive things that you guys want to get into? I don't have a lengthy list, because in some ways it's hard to talk about it when they're so suffocating, right? Maybe talk a little bit about the linebackers. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to get Derek's thoughts, because we didn't get him for Miami of Ohio, sure, and we got him here for Colorado. I think Jack Gibbons and Mariano Storie-Marin are playing much better against the run. But what have you seen the last 2 weeks from Minnesota's linebackers, Derek?
Oh, yeah, I was going to – if Luke hadn't brought it up, I was going to say that I wanted to put in a word for the linebackers. Run defense was, from the front seven, was fantastic on Saturday. I think, Colorado at the quarterback position, if I'm being honest here, was a little bit lacking, and I think they were a little bit hampered throwing the ball. And so I think that just has to be said. I don't want to take too much away from the Gopher defense, but running the ball, they've got a very talented running back. They have been able to run the ball previously, and very good game, best game of the year so far. I know it's early from the Gopher linebackers in the run. As you mentioned, Ryan, Mariano and Jack Gibbons, playing with good instincts, playing gap sound, able to finish, really good tackling game, I think, from the Gophers defense all around. And then lastly, you saw what we've seen previously. They started to use Braylon Oliver in some of those blitz situations. So look to see them go back to that, whether it's run blitz or pass blitz. He comes in, they like to put him, get some pressure. You saw that, like you mentioned, Ryan, they don't want the DNs to light their hair on fire and get way upfield. But I think what they're going to do is use things like those ET stunts that got home a couple times. And then I think they will bring some pressure from time to time from like a Justice Harris, Braylon Oliver, things like that. And then lastly, I would say too, they started using Coney Durr on what we've called before the Chris Williamson scheme, where they run zone everywhere, but they take one defender and put a man to man on their best receiver. They did that with Coney Durr quite a bit on Saturday. And that, I think, added to some of the confusion for Colorado's offense, mixing up the coverage a little bit, and which gave a little bit more time for the rush.
So I also would be remiss if we didn't touch about those guys in the secondary, because very little missed tackles. They were solid in coverage. I mean, you saw pass breakups by Coney Durr, Justin Wally. You saw Philip Howard make some plays. I mean, I was very encouraged by Justin Wally. That's the true freshman, number zero. He's able to run stride for stride down the field. If he doesn't trip over his own feet, I think he's got a great shot at an interception. You also saw him make a play on that third down where he absolutely legally lights up that receiver for Colorado, and that left him gasping for air. And that's one of the things like I wanted to see from these corners this year, was it was so prevalent under Tracy Clays and Jay Sava, was physical corners that can make plays. And that's where Justin Wally, as a true freshman, has displayed. He's not afraid to be physical. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because I don't know that you can teach really a guy to be overly physical. But, I mean, we've also seen, Derek, I mean, between these corners, and again, you weren't here for Miami of Ohio, but I thought it was the second straight game where Tyler Newbin at that safety spot really came downhill, made some plays. And I think we're starting to see some things start to settle in the secondary, which obviously is very encouraging, Derek.
Yeah, I think that what with that running a lot of zone on the back end, what that will give you as these guys gather more experience and are able to see more plays and just get more playing time, is it's going to lend to possibly more turnovers in the secondary, interceptions and things like that. I think you saw that with Tyler on the one in the Miami game, but it's really encouraging to see these guys play the ball. Many times young secondary players, they have the speed and they can run with guys down the field. You know, your corners are usually the fastest players on the team or right up there, but they sometimes have a real problem playing the ball. So you can have the fastest guy in the, you know, recruiting class come in, but some guys, it takes them a few games. Some guys, it takes them 2-3 years to learn to play the ball. So it was really encouraging. I know it's a small sample size and I don't want to overstate it, but Justin Wally being able to turn and play the ball both on the, you know, deflected pass near interception, but then also coming up and making a good hit on a near catch earlier in the game. That's really encouraging because some guys do not pick that up right away as a freshman or even as a sophomore or things like that. So the fact that he has that skill is really good to see. Because, you know, all the speed in the world doesn't matter if you're not able, you know, to be fair, kind of hit the point home here. I think maybe you saw that a little bit with Tyler playing last year. Was a guy that he had to learn angles. He had to learn how to play the ball. He's got a good body. He has all the physical tools, but it's just taken him a little bit of time, and maybe that's now starting to click. So with Justin and the rest of those guys, I think it's going to be fun to see the progression here if they can stay healthy, to running a little bit more dynamic coverage in the back end, maybe forcing some more turnovers and having those guys just flat out play the way we've seen some of those secondary players like Eric Murray and Brian Calhoun and guys like that in the of past.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit in the last episode about, you know, who's going to be that it factor guy, and I challenged Ryan to tell me who it would be, you know, just that guy on defense is going to make plays. And I think we both settled in on Tyler Newbin. But maybe Derek, I'll throw you that same question. Who's that kind of it factor guy, you know, that they've had in years past, whether it's a Carter Coughlin or it's a Antoine Winfield Jr., you know, who on this defense can be that it factor guy for you?
Well, yeah. And full disclosure, I think I kind of said the same thing after week one, and, you know, you're seeing guys in the right position and maybe guys being gap sound, but in order to take that next step, I think you need one or two players to kind of be breakout big play guys, whatever cliche you want to use. So I think that's a fair point. I think what you're seeing now from Thomas Rush is really encouraging, you know, and this is, we've talked about it in the past. And again, one of the reasons I love college football is it's don't ever give up on a guy. You know, you see guys early in their career sometimes or at different points and it's just not clicking for them. And you're saying, well, we've seen what we get from this guy. He's not good enough, or he's not good enough in this situation, or he just doesn't have it or whatever. Well, these are college athletes. I mean, these guys are not only physically changing every year, but mentally they're picking up the game. They're picking up the speed. And I think it's fair to say Thomas is one of those guys that things didn't slow down for him previously. And what we've seen so far this year, he's had some really good flashes where if he's able to use his physical tools, I think he can get some, his closing speed is really good. I think he can get some big pressures and maybe be that guy, you know, to get home on the quarterback and use him in some of those stunt schemes to be a big play guy for the defense.
Yeah, I love the Thomas Rush call there.
Yeah,
I do. I mean, he's played well. I think he leads. Let me look at the PFF grades here. But I think Derek's right in that. I mean, he leads the team in pressures. He leads the team in hurries. I think he's tied for the team lead in sacks now with two. And that's where it takes a little bit of time for some guys to have a click. And that's where, again, I think it's starting to, he's starting to figure out. I think Jack Gibbons, you've seen the last couple of weeks here, has been making plays near the line of scrimmage. You forced that fumble on the quarterback that Justice Harris was able to recover. I mean, they're starting to have guys figure it out as time goes on, which is what you needed if this defense is going to be viable going into Big Ten play, which I think we've seen the last couple of weeks. Now, I know you look at the scoreboard, and it's 26 points against Miami of Ohio. I still think the defense played much better than what the scoreboard shows, but they need to have another good performance this upcoming weekend for homecoming, because stated it once, I'll continue to state it. Bowling Green is not a very good football team. And if they score more than 10, 14 points, I mean, that's not the kind of note you want to go into Big Ten play again on. But I feel better that this defense in Rossi, and I think just this coaching staff, Luke, is now that they're three games in, I think Derek would tell you, and what opposing coordinators will look at is your three most recent games. So now you'll have enough tape to develop an adequate game plan in each one of the opponents going forward. And they know more to what guys are having the light turn on and which ones are still waiting. And I will be curious to see in the next three games here, as Minnesota continues to go throughout their season, is what guys continue to earn more snaps, what guys continue to be used in different ways. Because I do think guys like Rush, Jack Gibbons, Tyler Newbin, Justin Wally, I mean, Mariano Sori-Marin as well, you're starting to see more guys emerge, which is promising.
Brian, it's once again time for Gopher Math. I'm reminded that with Ayers Rock Planning, in life, there's a number of times that you're going to have to spend a lot of money, and one of them might be putting your kids through college. Like, I'm actually holding my two-year-old son right now, and I'm just thinking of putting him through college. Like, holy cats. And I know you, as an I-9er, you often have to cut big checks to the IRS. And frankly speaking, yeah, it's always best to have a plan. And Ayers Rock Plan is going to bring you that plan of how they can save you money legally and ethically through the tax code.
Absolutely. And I continue to talk about it each and every week. Me as an independent contractor, me as someone who's got a 1099 every year when you're doing the taxes, me as someone that just got checks of thousands of dollars to the man, to the IRS, for different various taxes, I want to make sure I'm not paying them as much as they need to get paid. I want to make sure that I don't have to cut gigantic tax checks. So I need to have someone that knows what they're doing so I can get the most bang for my buck, so I can keep the most money that I can possibly have. And that's where the people at Ayers Rock Plans, I mean, that's what they do. They help you save money, especially you as the independent contractor, you as the person who owns a business. They can help you save money by making sure, Luke, that you're getting the most bang for your buck as they go through and look that you're saving the most amount of money, so you can keep that in your wallet.
All right, so let's just get to that Gopher Math question. Again, tag Ryan Burns, tag Gopher Radio, tag Ayers Rock Plan, A-Y-E-R-S Plan, on Twitter. And the question is, again, this is for 2 months of GI. The question is, the Gophers' total return yards divided by the difference between Colorado's longest pass and Colorado's longest run. Again, the difference between Colorado's longest pass by the difference between the longest pass and the longest run. Good luck.
So, yeah, tag go hashtag go for math. Tag me at Ryan Burns MN. Tag Ayers Rock Plans, A-Y-E-R-S, Rock Plans, all one word, on Twitter, and as well as the Gopher Radio. And you will get 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated. Let's get to it.
All right, let's talk a little bit of special teams. And frankly, Ryan, I have not been looking forward to this basically since end of game yesterday, knowing that we have to talk about special teams, knowing that this is something that irritates you pretty much more than a mosquito. Over and over, I was not looking forward to this. Here's the reality. Mark Crawford, he was all right. He did bang a 57-yarder, 43.3 average. That was okay. Matthew Trickett had a tough day. And, you know, blame it on the altitude or what, 1 for 3 in field goals, 3 for 4 on extra points. I do have to say, though, I did think that they did all right in punt return. I have been very encouraged with punt return all season. In the last two games, because the first game, I think they fair caught everything, but I've been encouraged there. But, Ryan, I will give you your soapbox. Can you give me an estimate of how long I need to quit listening?
Give me a couple minutes here.
Okay.
I think the first thing I'll say is I'm curious to see, is this the outlier or the start of a trend?
That's fair.
We saw two good games, special teams, and then we saw them implode again. So I don't know what is the outlier and what's the trend, but that's going to be something I'm going to be looking for this upcoming game. But it didn't end up mattering, all these missed kicks and the kick return debacle and the issues with the punting game once again. But there are going to be games where that type of special teams performance, as we saw one season ago, It literally cost Minnesota two games between Maryland and Wisconsin, where simple tasks aren't performed, and Minnesota loses a football game they shouldn't lose. So Fleck talked about afterwards how Matthew Trickett is still his guy. There's no court. I mean, there's no kicking competition. I'd love to see Matthew Trickett rebound next week, but it's the same old stuff with the return game. Now, to Luke's point, I mean, Minnesota did have some returns. It was certainly, I think, a thing where the Colorado punter was out kicking his coverage. But why is Trey Potts the starting running back returning?
Yeah.
And then why is your number two option, you drop from Trey Potts to Brock Anixtead? That is, I mean, Brock Anixtead, if you're listening to this, no offense, buddy, but it's like the number of quick twitch fibers in your body compared to somebody like Trayson Potts is very different. How is that the option there? And then the lone kick return, it's just another debacle where Bryce Williams fields it on one knee. How do you – Bucky Irving is right behind him, ready to receive it. He steps in front, has a knee down. Minnesota starts 14 yards worse in field position. And then I'm curious to see, because the 157-yarder that Mark Crawford unloaded, it was an Aussie-style kick.
Yes.
He got it, took a few steps to his right, and he booted it. I mean, that's what he's comfortable with. It's a rugby-style kick. That's what he did his entire life in Australia. And then you saw him shank the 30-yarder, but it was a traditional style. Why not go back to the Aussie style there and just have your protection shift to the right so he can get that off? I'm not incredibly sure, but I think that's – I mean, to your point – I mean, I could go on for a long time on Rob Wenger's inadequacies, and here we are again, but I hope this is the outlier performance and that everybody bounces back next week, but it's just, here we are again, and I don't know how people can't see this, like what, something needs to change in special teams if, you know, performances like this, because you can't miss a 24-yard field goal, you can't doink an extra point. I mean, you say what you will about a 46-yard field goal in college football, but having those extra 4 points going into halftime would have been massive.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have been up 3 scores, 17-0 instead of 13-0. That is a much different realm of, there's a lot of things that then have to happen between 17-0 and 13-0. And so I'm hoping that this special teams performance just isn't the start of here we go again for Rob Wenger.
Derek, any thoughts you'd like to contribute to special teams? Just some observations.
Yeah, well, two things. I think with Matthew, we're in a little bit different situation, and nobody here or really anywhere can say why he missed the kicks. But just an observation, we're in a different situation insofar as you've got a capable kicker who missed a couple versus what we've seen in past seasons is you literally have guys that cannot make a kick over 40, 45 yards. So a little different situation. Does that help? Not really, but just knowing that you have a kicker capable of hitting it if he's on is, I think, a little different. But, you know, one, I don't want to make this as a judgment here, but just an observation that's kind of interesting to me is if you look around at teams in college football that aren't at the blue blood level, that aren't getting, you know, they aren't selecting, as Ryan would say, in recruiting, they're having to recruit hard, you know, kind of your up teams that want to climb the ladder, if you will, of which, you know, Minnesota is certainly one of them. For many of those teams, or at least some of them, special teams is an opportunity to get an advantage, to win a game, you know, like whether it's, we're going to develop an incredible punt block team, or we're going to do something and, you know, we're going to have one of the greatest punt games, punt coverage teams we can, because we feel like if we're going to do well in the other phases, maybe that's what's going to give us an advantage. And, you know, so far with this staff, it seems that special teams is, maybe this is just another example of risk aversion. It's, we're just trying to be safe with special teams. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I don't want to make this as a judgment that they're doing it all wrong or that they need to change it or whatever, but it's just an observation that, I mean, Ryan, I don't know when the last time this staff has tried to block a punt. I mean, it's been punt safe for 2.5
effing time. It's just the punt game in particular is just so frustrating, because to Derek's point, you don't use an Aussie style punt with an Australian kicker, and then you don't go with punt return, but you never go with punt block. So it's like, well, what's the point of just not keeping the defense on the field? I don't know, Derek. I just don't know at this point.
And maybe it's, you know, we're in year 4 or 5 of recruiting, and they, you know, they're building the depth that they feel like they need in order to take that next step. I can't speak for them, but again, just an observation that you look around at, you know, Iowa as an example, and maybe Northwestern and teams like that. They look at special teams as an opportunity that we're going to try to get a little advantage on at least 1 or 2 phases of special teams. And that so far just hasn't been the approach. And maybe it's a depth issue. Maybe it's a, you know, build talent through recruiting issue. I don't know. It's but it would be interesting to see if that changes over time. And you know, getting things shored up, I guess, is step one, and not having special teams hurt you. But then beyond that is, okay, let's not just be average, or let's not just compete or you know, toe the line in special teams. Let's try to create an advantage. Let's block a punt. Let's run a fake punt on you know, when we're punting it, or develop really good coverage somewhere to where, you know, we can win a game through special teams.
Yeah, and I know that they did block that punt against Michigan in the opener last year, but I agree with you. Otherwise, it's basically been punt safe. I just have one other comment. I'm not trying to make excuses for Matthew Trickett, but I will say, having kicked myself, kicking off of turf versus natural grass is different. I don't know how much experience he got with that, or practice he got with that during the week, but you know, maybe that contributed to it. At the end of the day, he needs to make those kicks, especially maybe not the 46 yarder, like it's maybe understandable, but you know, the first one and the extra point, he needs to make those regardless of playing surface. But it is a unique situation going from turf to grass. The footing is different, and kind of your routine's just a tiny bit different. But the one I was encouraged on, he didn't miss them like super bad, like shanks. It wasn't like everything was off. He just pushed it. So anything else, Ryan? On special teams? Go ahead.
I was going to say that too, Luke. If you look at the kicks, he wasn't all over the place. His kicks weren't drifting, things like that. He just, right. He pushed, I think, a couple of them. And it was good to see the one he made was just spot on. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not concerned about Trickett. I am if this is what happens again next week. But I've seen enough Matthew Trickett throughout his entire career to know this is probably the aberration and not the trend.
I think the thing, just to close out on special teams, is if Matthew Trickett struggles, knowing the success he had at Kent State, I think you're lying to yourself if you don't think that it's something to do with the coaching.
If Matthew Trickett is now broken,
yes,
and we see it for multiple consecutive weeks, there is one common denominator, yes, in that room, and that's been the issue the last few years. But I hope that doesn't become the case.
Again, longtime partner of ours, the Burns Insurance Agency in Oakdale, Minnesota. Ryan, what is Burns Insurance Agency going to bring their customers?
Yeah, I can tell you that the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, is in a great mood as we currently sit here. Is on opening night of bow season, he was able to get one on the ground. So he is to the moon. But this is a man that really believes in service, service, service. His goal as a huge Gopher fan and as an independent insurance agent isn't to be the biggest insurance agency, but to make sure they are providing the best possible service. That means putting your needs first and providing you with the service that you deserve. Now, many Gopher fans have contacted him, and they've experienced that exemplary service that they deserve. Now, he is a local independent insurance agent who is a big Gopher fan in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. He offers great savings, great coverages, and above all else, great service. So if you want to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck with your insurance, he is an independent insurance agent. He can put your coverage against 20 different other insurance companies to make sure you're getting the best coverage or the best price. So if you want to learn more, email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com or head to insurancebyburns.com.
All right. And just to close out, we've been talking a little Big Ten in general and looking at the conference from afar and how it impacts the Gophers. Just real quick, games that stuck out to either of you, things that are highlights to you, or teams to look out for. So Ryan, I don't know if you want to go first. I mean, I didn't even prepare you guys for this, but any games in particular that kind of stick out to you?
Well, I think through 3 weeks, now we still have another 9 to go, but I think the Big Ten West is shaping up like we thought it was going to be. It's Iowa, Wisconsin, mini tier below them, Minnesota, tier below them, the rest of the Big Ten West. I have not been impressed with Northwestern at all. Nebraska looks like they have a solid defense, but their offense continues to be a debacle. Purdue is Purdue, and I mean, Illinois is Illinois. So I think West-wise, I think it's shaping up like we thought. I still don't know. Like, Iowa's defense now scored like 6 defensive touchdowns through 3 weeks?
They didn't score a touchdown, I don't think, in this game, did they? I know they got the
safety. They did.
Oh, did they get another touchdown?
I think they got points at least. But, like, it's like, I know I made the joke to Luke that has Iowa's defense outproduced their offense?
Yeah.
And I think, like, they're within, like, 20 points, which is crazy. I still have so many questions about Iowa's offense. But I don't know that it matters if Iowa's defense is just going to continuously score points every week.
I mean, go ahead.
It's just not sustainable that Iowa's defense can continue to score points every week. That's just not how it works. Maybe it works again next week against a bad Colorado State team. But I think it's going to be interesting, especially when you look forward here, Luke. I mean, you have Wisconsin versus Notre Dame in the battle of whose nose can get higher in the air down at Soldier Field. But I think when you look at the West, it's kind of just shaping up the way I thought it was going to be, that there's 3 teams that have a realistic shot, and Minnesota's among them.
Yeah, I'll just close on the Iowa thing. I think that your take on Iowa's run defense is almost as bad as your Hank Ekpe take back in the day.
Whoa. What, because they shut down the Kent State Golden Flash's run defense?
Well, Kent State, 79 yards rushing against Iowa. Kent State against Texas A&M, how many yards do you think they had?
I don't think Texas A&M... 226.
I think Texas A&M sucks, but maybe.
I don't think they're a top 5 team. No. I think they're probably a low 20s team. But like, I don't think Iowa's defensive line is all that, but their linebackers in secondary are playing at a level that is unbelievable. So, yeah, I mean, their defense, I think, is the best in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah.
And I understand that Wisconsin's got a great defense. Penn State's got a great defense. But what Iowa is doing defensively right now is just, I mean, their linebackers and secondary are playing at such a high level.
Yeah, nobody's rushed for over 100 yards against Iowa yet. Iowa's defense is the real deal. Okay, Derek, games that kind of stuck out to you here in the Big Ten?
Well, I think overall, just to comment on a trend, maybe it's just because it's early in the season, I don't know, but I think if you're a coach in the Big Ten, maybe in the Big Ten West, you've got to prepare to play these elite defenses. How are you going I think you have to move away from, we're going to go in, we're going to just try and control the ball, you know, get, you know, a chunk of yardage on every play. Because some of these, at least so far, some of these defenses, Ryan already mentioned them, but Iowa, Wisconsin, and then I think Penn State, these are really shut down defenses. So how do you manufacture explosive gains? Do you work in some trick plays? I don't like that term, but do you manufacture some gadget plays? Do you try to, you know, force some mismatches? How do you figure that out if you're an offensive coordinator? I think that's the challenge ahead of teams in the Big Ten going forward, because either you're going to go in against some of these elite defenses and try to win the game 10-6, or you got to somehow find a way to create some explosive gains on offense to move the ball. That's what I've seen so far. Now, maybe that's an early season thing, and maybe as teams open up the playbook more and things loosen up, that changes, and then we're changing our tune. But I would just say, like, you know, Iowa, Indiana early in the season, you know, I was always contended that you play a team like Iowa, you have to find a way to get some big plays. You can't just beat them at their own game, not making mistakes. Well, Indiana went in trying everything they could to make big plays, and it just blew up on them. I mean, they threw, I think, They had two defensive touchdowns, Iowa did, in that game. So that's the risk of trying to force it. Shows you what I know. That would have been my approach, is try to make some big plays, and it can blow up on you fast. So that, I think, so far this season is what I've taken away, is how are you going to take on some of these, trying to get something against some of these, what I feel are so far, once in half a decade level defenses we're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. The defenses are good. Obviously Wisconsin and Iowa being the top, I'd probably agree with you, Ryan, that Iowa's defense right now is probably the top of the top. And maybe just to close out on just looking at the conference in general, man, Michigan State has just come out of nowhere for me. Like, I just did not see this happening. I don't know that Miami was worthy of being ranked. It's obviously still early, but they laid the wood on Miami, winning 38-17. Was this a surprise for you, Ryan, with Michigan State?
I think Michigan State is the team Michigan State in 2021 is the team that, you know, people wanted Indiana to be in 2021. I don't know that Indiana's good. Are we sure they're any good? Are we?
I mean, what, because they're 1-2, they're 1-2 right now.
Yeah, but like Michael Penix has been bad. Like, I understand Cincinnati and Iowa, they're good teams. I get it. But like that, I don't know that Indiana's more than a 6 or a 7 win team. But Michigan State, I'm glad Minnesota doesn't have them on the schedule this year. I mean, Mel Tucker's got that thing rolling right now. And you look at their upcoming schedule. Yeah. Like 7-1 going into November is very attainable for them. I'm just glad that, like I said, Minnesota doesn't have them. Like, I don't know that. Are we sure Maryland's any good? I mean, Luke, you were watching that game on Friday night.
Yeah.
I mean, Illinois just absolutely imploded in the final 6 minutes of that game to give Maryland. I mean, that is a bad Illinois defense. Brennan Armstrong, former Gopher commit. He won like all these national awards because he put up 5 touchdowns and like 400 yards. Yet Mike Locksley can't figure out how to move the ball. you and I share this opinion. I don't think Mike Locksley is a good coach. I really don't.
I don't think he's necessarily worthy of being a head coach. I think he's definitely got some. He's definitely a plus offensive coach. But yeah, I generally would agree with you on that. So.
I mean, Michigan State looks like a team that I don't think you can put them in the same tier as Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State in the East there, but they certainly look like a team that's going to give those three teams a run for their money. I'm trying to look and see who Michigan State's got here in the schedule, but any other takes from you two?
I want to say one thing. Like, I use the comparison between common opponents. I don't think that that's a good approach with the Iowa take in the rush defense, where Texas A&M, you know, put up, you know, Kent State put up 200 plus rushing yards against Texas A&M. I generally don't think that applies all that well, or doesn't scale particularly well in the sense of college football is so unique and it's going to ebb and flow, and you never know what's going to show up on a given Saturday. So for instance, like Maryland plays Kent State this week, Maryland might put up 50. Who knows? I have no clue what's going to happen, but to compare that to, you know, well, Maryland's better than whoever else, or is on the same tier as maybe Iowa. I think that's really hard. I think it's really hard to make that argument.
The transitive property of college football should never be a thing.
Yeah.
Because to Derek's point, to lead off the podcast, I mean, look at the Minnesota team from 1 week to the next.
Yes.
They squeak by Miami of Ohio and then go on the road and absolutely trample a Colorado team that just hung in with Texas A&M and arguably should have won that game in Colorado. So it's like, welcome to 18 to 22-year-olds where, yes, you know to a degree what you're going to see in a given week, but just because XYZ team beat XYZ team doesn't mean that, I mean, again, the transitive property of college football, I think, is done.
All right, Derek, any parting thoughts before we shut this thing down?
No, just, you know, my thought on Maryland, you guys were talking about that, is it seems that they're with their misdirection and wide open offense, it's either feast or famine with them. Yeah, they're either typically scoring 40 plus, or they have a hard time scoring. And they've also tended to be better early in the year. And I think once teams get more tape and figure out what they're doing, they kind of slow down as the year goes on. But it just adds to the, you know, dynamic of, are they going to play a defense that has them figured out or not? Because if they come in and are able to score early and the defense isn't able to catch up to what they're doing, you know, again, with the misdirections and things like that, it's one of those almost like playing the option. If you can't shut it down, it's almost too late by the time, you know, the game's underway. So that might be a little bit of what you're seeing in Maryland. So it's worth tuning in just to see, no matter who they're playing, just to see if they can, you know, how they're going to be defended.
I would say generally, though, if you look at the Gophers' schedule, we talked about this early in the season, it still looks pretty favorable. You've got an opportunity to build a pretty good resume going into November. You know, Bowling Green's not a great team, and then you don't take on you probably won't play a ranked opponent, I would assume, until Iowa, unless something crazy happens. But I don't see Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern, Illinois, any of those being ranked anytime soon. So,
and that's what we talked about to preview the season, Luke, was if Minnesota can just be consistent. I mean, look at the next teams. Who is the best among them? I mean, is it Nebraska? Is it Maryland?
Nebraska or Maryland at this point.
I don't know. Minnesota's got a chance here to make a real run to get to those final 3 weeks of the year, but it starts this upcoming week. And Derek, I mean, I think this is I don't think Minnesota loses this game. Like, I think you play this game 100 times. I don't know how Minnesota loses the Bowling Green, but it's one of those games, Derek, where Minnesota, I think, opened as a 31-point favorite here today against Bowling Green. I think that's been bet down to 28. And I think Luke knows all the statistics about taking Minnesota at plus 20, whatever, especially early in the year, is just a horrible
bet. It's a bad bet.
But I mean, you have Bowling Green this weekend, and then how do you not, if you're Minnesota, not get caught in a look ahead situation where you just steamrolled Colorado? Bowling Green isn't a good team, and you're going to have to travel to West Lafayette to open October there. So, and you've played in these type of situations. Mm-hmm. So if you're Minnesota, how don't you fall into this quote unquote trap game?
Well, it's tough. And because the trap you fall into is to say, we're going to go in and play the game we want to play. And, you know, we have better talent. And so we're going to run what we want on offense. We're going to stay in base defense and let them do whatever. And I think that's a mistake, especially in this era of college football, where, you know, we can talk about it on a whole nother podcast, the way things shake out from top to bottom. But yes, Minnesota is going to have more talent. I agree with you. They shouldn't lose the game. But at the same time, I think you still have to stay sharp with going out and saying, and coming into the game plan, but then looking at, what are they giving you? How are we going to respond to it? We're going to, you know, stay reactive. We're going to take what they give us, you know, as the cliches go. But stay sharp on it to keep your players engaged with the game. If you're just going to be so stubborn that you go out and no matter what they do, you're just going to run what you do, then you're going to get into a frustrating game. The players are, you know, the fans are going to be frustrated. Those are tough to watch. And the players are going to struggle to be engaged. So it's tough. You know, I guess I am overstating it now, but I as a player, I don't want to say easier, but there's a completely different mentality. And in some ways it is easier to go in as a big underdog. It's fun to go in some ways and say, we're taking on number two in the country, number five in the country. We're going to give them our best. You know, it's kind of we have nothing to lose mentality and let it all out there. It's a different challenge going the opposite direction, because now that team has that attitude, and you just have to, again, stay sharp, take them seriously, react to what they give you, and you know, do what you do, and know that if you don't win the game, you know, 45-0 or whatever the expectations are, you know, you got to just keep that in and try to get away with a win and no injuries.
I'll tell you, we'll get into Bowling Green in the Wednesday podcast, but it feels like a 31-7 type of game, where it is what it is at the end of it. But Luke, when you look ahead to the Big Ten schedule for this upcoming Saturday, it kind of sucks. I mean, there are like three games that stand out to me. The number one would be, again, you have which nose can be higher in the air between Notre Dame and Wisconsin down at Soldier Field. I don't think Notre Dame's particularly any good from what they've showed so far this season, but we'll see if Jim Leonard's defense can figure out some things in the Jack Cohn revenge game. It's going to be, can you imagine Wisconsin fans if Jack Cohn beats Wisconsin Notre Dame? Oh my goodness. I'm going to be,
do you know if
there, those message,
you know,
boards
there. I was going to look and see if there's a favorite yet in, if there's
I'm sure there. That, yeah, the lines just came out.
Yeah,
six, look at that.
It's a minus six at a 46.5 over under so in favor of Wisconsin.
Interesting. That does, yeah, that does not surprise me. I think Wisconsin should be favored in that game. And then the only really other two, I think, games of note are going to be Illinois versus Purdue. Just because, number one, Purdue's Minnesota's next opponent after Bowling Green. I kind of want to see how things shake out there. And then the last one is going to be, it's going to be, hey, Scott Frost, is your team worth anything? Because they got to go take on Luke's favorite team in the East now, Michigan State in East Lansing. Now, I think Nebraska's played better to start the season, but their record is their record. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to be a Big Ten, if they're going to make a bowl game, this has to be a win for them in East Lansing against a team that is playing with a ton of confidence right now in Michigan State.
I think that the Rutgers-Michigan game could be interesting next week. I don't think that Rutgers is Rutgers offensively isn't great, but defensively they've been okay. I'm excited to see that Michigan offense, which has been pretty potent in the run game, take on Rutgers and see how real are either of those teams. It's probably going to be the best game for either of them, you know, given my Huskies are absolutely putrid on offense. They figured some stuff out this week, but man, they're bad. Well,
last thing I'll say is I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if Minnesota is not halfway to bowl eligibility when we're talking this time next week.
Yep. But
I'm just excited to hopefully see more of these freshman running backs, Luke.
Yeah, definitely. Again, we want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club, Ayers Rock Financial, or Ayers Rock Planning, and Burns Insurance. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.